county surveyors in Oregon. I count many of them as my friends. But typically, they do not have the background necessary to sit in judgment on and to approve individually, county to county, the geodetic control that they will be using. I've offered the reasons for my objection, and again, I would like to support the entire bill with this amendment. I think the work that the people have put into it is very valuable, and I have been a small part of it, but I really think that you should consider this amendment, which will serve to simplify and standardize the practice from county to county. Thank you.
Sure. Representative Markham.
In the committee's indulgence, I'd like to ask Mr. Buckholder to go over to the blackboard and draw me that half-mile thing he's talking about. I don't understand it.
Okay.
Or any kind of picture you want to draw, elementary enough so I can understand it. You understand? What's your proposal versus what the county's state association is, what we're interested in?
It's difficult to draw the difference between having an individual county surveyor passing judgment on the quality of work, which should be referenced to some standard specification.
This got anything to do with those brass caps you find out in the brush once in a while, if you're interested in that sort of thing that the feds have cemented into rocks and whatnot?
That's correct, sir. If two known points are 1 mile apart and were established by the federal government, 1/2 mile either way to come in and set a brand new monument. This can be done by the county, it can be done by a private surveyor, it can be done by anyone who follows the specifications. Then any subdivision which is within 1/2 mile of a control monument established in conformance with the specifications. The geometrical integrity is the issue that I am concerned with. Now, the county surveyor can do that. A private organization can do that. The point that I'm trying to make is, regardless of who does it, it's to be used in this bill only if it meets certain minimum level specifications. And at the risk of insulting someone, the technical background of the county surveyor in matters of geodetic control doesn't necessarily include the ability to make correct judgments about establishment of geodetic control. Many of them can. But given that the minimum specifications are established, then it doesn't matter whether the federal government does it, whether the state agency does it, whether the county surveyor does it, or whether a private organization establishes the control point as long as it meets the minimum specifications.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the bill is written without your amendment, does not have minimum standards in it?
The bill as written says, approved by the National Geodetic Survey or has been approved by the county surveyor.
But can the county surveyor accept anything less than the national?
There's nothing in the current version of the bill that would require him to.
Who would determine this, and how would it be determined?
That's a part of a much bigger issue, the issue of using modern technology in the best way possible. The Oregon Land Records Committee, which functions under the Oregon Map Advisory Council, has been discussing the issue. It's a big issue. It's a broad issue. It's bigger than this bill. Optimistically, the problem will be continued to be discussed among professionals throughout the state. The problem is identified on the last three pages of the handout that I gave you. The problem, the solution, and the implementation. The problem on third to the last page, the problem is described. This was a paper that I prepared for the Oregon Land Records Committee last fall. The problem is described, a solution is described, and implementation is described. It was pointed out that the solution and implementation is politically unfeasible. That may be true. Even though the ideal solution, if we call it an ideal solution, even though the ideal solution is not practical at this time, the question that you ask still is a part of the bigger problem. And although the amendment that I have offered does not correct everything, it prevents us from going into an environment where the individual county surveyor can approve geodetic control in one county that would not be approved in another county. We need the standardization, and we need the minimum specifications to be enforced.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wehage.
Earl, I know nothing about land surveying, even though I'm a registered professional engineer, so I want to go back to basics on this and start with some basic questions.
What were you doing down there?
I didn't have to take surveying, nor draft. I'll tell you sometime over lunch. this phrase, first of all, that we're modifying here, we're talking about approval of established geodetic control monument. That's the phrase that is referred to as far as approving. Would you explain exactly what an established geodetic control monument is?
An established geodetic control monument typically is a brass tablet set in concrete. Now, the brass tablet in concrete provides stability. The monument really is the record position, that is the latitude and longitude, how far north of the equator and how far from Greenwich, England, latitude and longitude, geodetic.
Okay. In saying that it is approved, what exactly are we approving? Are we approving the process by which it was placed or the actual placement? Does the approval imply that it was properly placed or that it was placed in accordance with an established procedure?
Okay. It would be possible to establish precise coordinates for a point without a monument there. That would be foolhardy because as soon as you kick the stake, the position would be destroyed. But the establishment of the monument, building the monument, is a part of the federal specifications. The process of making the measurements, the process of collecting the data and doing the computations, those processes are described in the Federal Geodetic Control Committee specifications. So it's the building of the monument, the collecting of the data, performing the computation. Those are all part of establishing a geodetic monument.
When the county surveyor reviews the information that's submitted to him or her, is there sufficient detail in that information for a check against an established procedure to confirm that it was done in accordance with that procedure?
Not to my knowledge.
And that's your concern?
That's my concern.
Okay, follow-on question. The approval by the National Geodetic Survey, is that an organization that has local offices, or would this information have to be submitted to a national office? Just how would that approval be accomplished?
The National Geodetic Survey is a national agency with primary responsibility for geodetic control all over the country. In the Reagan years, federal budgets being what they are, that agency has suffered severe budget cuts. They are not able to provide the local level service that they have been in the past. At the same time, advancing technology has made it possible for people at the local level to get similar results without devoting as much resources to it as a federal agency did. So it is possible for individuals at the local level to collect the data. It's very can be very good data, and to emulate the process performed by the National Geodetic Survey. You ask if they had local offices. The state of Oregon does have an NGS geodetic advisor who has an office in the Department of Transportation building. He's half salary paid by the federal government, half salary by the state government. And as far as the overall network is concerned, they are providing a superb level of service. There is a gap between the service provided by the agency and implementation at the local level. I'm concerned with the geometrical integrity of operations within the gap.
Can you tell me how many times per year this activity occurs in Oregon, the placement of these brass monuments?
No, I can't tell you, but there are many, many points set. Many, many geodetic control points are used. Not every point is dignified with a brass tablet set in concrete. Sometimes it's just a tack in a wood stake because the point is dispensable or disposable. I am primarily concerned about the permanent geodetic control monuments that are expected to be used as the basis of subsequent surveys by others.
Just one more question, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Can you give me an idea why you think that the county surveyor doesn't have the ability to provide this approval? Is there a lack of training? Is there something specific that you can point to that would cause their credibility to be challenged?
On the second page of the letter I sent to Bernie Eggman's, may I read the first full paragraph on that page? Establishing reliable geodetic control requires knowledge and understanding of three-dimensional geometry, map projections, error propagations, datums, data adjustment, and precise measurement analysis. The National Geodetic Survey is responsible for establishment of the basic National Geodetic Reference System of first and second order control points. However, more points are needed than they can budgetarily provide, and recent technological developments in GPS surveying has made it possible for anyone to do the geodetic surveying if they have the equipment. The consequences are very different, but the analogy is permitting a dentist to do brain surgery. Just because the dentist has the equipment and the facilities doesn't mean that he can do the job. The level of experience and the body of knowledge is quite different. Yes, the rigor and the technical knowledge of the geometry involved typically is beyond the training received by the county surveyor.
Representative Markey.
Well,
Mr. Burkholder, are you able to teach your students a degree when they graduate down there? They can go out and close that gap that's you mentioned?
That's correct.
How about up at Oregon State? Are they coming out of there capable of doing that?
The surveying program at Oregon State was in the Department of Civil Engineering. The surveying program at Oregon Institute of Technology has more surveying courses, we have more faculty, more equipment, more students. In specific answer to your question, they can. If they had all the classes that were offered. The surveying curriculum at OSU has withered a lot. Our program is better.
It's well spoken, little Brooke Gilbert.
We're going to close this hearing just momentarily to get some testimony from Cy Kornbrook from the Boundary Commission, but we'll get you back up and make sure there's no more questions and then hear the surveyor's side. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Cy, why don't you come forward and share with us pearls of wisdom on island annexation.
Cy Kornbrook, 3810 Northeast Fremont, Portland. I'm a member of the Portland Metropolitan Area Local Government Boundary Commission, although I am not here to represent the Boundary Commission. I represent my own views regarding island annexation. I'm not a fan of island annexation. I've not been a fan of island annexation on the Boundary Commission. I don't think that taking in great groups of people through the use of an island process really is conducive to having people that will then support the city and support the goals of the city. However, I think there are two important areas for island annexation. Number one, when you have one or two small properties that are just holding out and are in effect getting the city services. And the other one that I think is just as important is if the island is preventing city services such as sewers or waters to other people because they can't run lines through the island because you have one water district, for instance, serving the island and you can't get through to other people. And under those circumstances, with those two very limited exceptions, I think I would be in favor personally of eliminating that concept. But I think those two exceptions are important to keep in, because we have had a case where they couldn't get water service through because of the existence of an island, and under that kind of thing, you're really hurting the great majority of the people. And then the other case where it's just one piece of property or two pieces of property that is just holding out and will hold out forever. I think that there's a valid purpose for an island annexation in those two things. But I particularly don't think you wish to bring a whole bunch of naysayers into a city because they resent the fact that they were taken through the island process without any say in it. And that's my comments on the island annexation.
How would you look at something that said that cities couldn't create an island with, say, more than 100 electors or 50 electors in it?
I would favor that. I would still have the one exception that they could take under exceptional circumstances, maybe a larger island if it really was a real burden on providing either water or sewer services to other people.
But I'm saying that they couldn't create an island of
I would be
that at the time it was created had more than 50 or 100.
I would be in favor of that.
Okay. Any questions?
Sure. Yes, Representative Mark. Thank you. So what stops condemnation in that issue you spoke of?
Well, I mean, condemnation.
Couldn't get a water line through one property owner because he was obstinate, or he didn't want to spend the money to go.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you can in all, and that's a very expensive and long, you know, process. We're on an island process, it may be a water line or a sewer line, and it may be through two or three properties. Under that circumstance, I would hold people's feet to the fire and make sure that there was that kind of circumstance before you took people in on an island basis.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 358 and get Earl back up here and see if there's any more questions of him. You say that there's a bigger question that needs to be resolved, and you've outlined it here. What is the harm of doing the county surveyor's program until
we're back and solve the bigger problem, or is that something we won't solve and it'll be solved by the Congress or somebody else?
I wish I knew the answer to your question. I think it is a mistake to implement new technology without using the proper standards, given that they are now available. If we did not reference the Federal Geodetic Control Committee specifications for the monument that we expect others to use, it is possible that there would be no harm done, because every county surveyor would equip themselves with the knowledge necessary to make correct decisions in every case.
You're saying that some counties would have to contract out for that expertise and others would have to hire people that specifically could do that if they didn't have it in-house already?
My training is in geodesy. I am registered as a surveyor, I'm registered as an engineer, I refer to myself as a geodetic engineer. I think there should be a geodetic engineer in every county surveyor's office. That's not practical. So if it's not practical to have that level of expertise in every county, isn't there an umbrella state mechanism whereby the technical issues can be studied, decided, and resolved, and that information made available to the county level? I understand that local control is very important, and I don't take issue with that. But I really think that the standardization of practice from county to county deserves merit, deserves your consideration.
Representative Wehake.
Earl, does the National Geodetic Survey now provide this type of service on a regular basis throughout the United States?
The answer is yes, but the delay is intolerable. As an agency, they're overworked and they're running very far behind in months and even years in some cases.
That was going to be my next question, the difference between going through them and going through the county surveyor.
But they're always right and they have the last word.
Would this be an unreasonable practice, though, to actually put in place right now to impose this requirement on people in this state if there's an unreasonable delay in getting that approval? Is it more costly? Does it, you know, what is the process like compared to going through the county surveyor?
Well, to prepare the work for submission to the National Geodetic Survey is time-consuming and costly. It is. And the delays are intolerable. Now, for the level of control that everyone needs on a day-to-day basis, it's not practical to expend that money or resources or to wait that long. But the specifications have been published, and if the specifications are followed, the specifications can be followed at the local level, given that someone decides we're going to follow the specifications.
I'm confused. You're telling me that it's an intolerable to do this sort of thing, but you want us to put it in a statute.
No.
Am I missing something here?
No. We have a misunderstanding. Okay. To get the National Geodetic Survey to do it would require unreasonable expenditure of funds and an unreasonable delay to get the results back from Washington. That's not the only alternative. The alternative that I'm suggesting is that the same specifications that they apply be used by individuals at the local level, even though the federal government is not actually doing it, but that the work be done to the same set of rules, if you will.
I'm sorry, I forgot what your proposed amendment said here. So basically you're saying that it still would be submitted to the county surveyor, but it must be done in accordance with the Federal Geodetic Control Committee specifications.
That's correct.
Now, whose responsibility would it be to confirm that it was done in accordance with the specifications?
I've wrestled with that, and it's a part of my overall solution, the last three pages. My proposed solution would establish an umbrella resource in some state agency which would provide a service to the individual counties. It specifically is not included in the words that I offered as an amendment. It would still be up to the county surveyor to check off or to verify that those specifications were followed. Or it could be that the county surveyor would require someone submitting the data to attest to the fact that this work was done in accordance with these specifications. Then it becomes the professional responsibility of the person doing the work.
Okay. Do you have a question, Representative Martin?
Probably not too pertinent, but Mr. Burkholder, who actually owns these monuments that are set in concrete? Is it the federal government, or is it the state, or county, or who?
When the federal government sets them, all the taxpayers of the nation own the monument.
What if you set one? Is your license, according to what I understand?
If I set one and no one pays me for it, it's mine.
Really?
If you pay me for it, it's yours.
But if the feds set it, it's one of those brass tacks out there about yay big around. It's quite a federal offense to disturb it, isn't it?
That's what the tablet says.
One up there, or the...
It says $250 fine for disturbing the monument.
He doesn't take the tag off his mattress and pillow either.
A point of clarification on who owns it. It also depends upon whose land it's on.
I see.
Okay, let's move back to the other folks and see if we can decide whether we can just do away with 9 altogether.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, again for the record, Chuck Pearson representing Professional Land Surveyors of Oregon. This paragraph 9 was proposed by and added to this legislation by the Oregon Land Records Committee, of which Mr. Burkholder spoke earlier. It has been approved by that committee. I serve in that committee. I think you may have, if you got it here, a letter from Professor Ken Duger of Portland State University, who chairs that committee. I'm going to let Fritz address most of the issues, and I think we've been talking about oranges, and we're talking about apples, and there's a significant difference. A lot of what Mr. Burkholder says I don't necessarily disagree with, but I do take exception to what he's trying to apply to the intent of this particular paragraph. Before I turn it over to Fritz, under the state law, any person that's licensed as a registered professional land surveyor can only practice surveying in that area in which he has expertise. In other words, if he's not competent to do geodetic surveying, by law he is precluded from doing it, even though he's a licensed surveyor. It would be like just because a person's a licensed engineer doesn't mean that he can do electronic engineering if he's a civil or something of that nature. And with this, I'll let Fritz make some points.
Go ahead, Representative
Fritz.
That's what I was going to tell you on lunch.
Fritz Ingram, Douglas County Surveyor, also with OACES. Let me tell you something that seems to be a slight misconception about how these monuments are set. Geodetic control monument is not a property point. It doesn't have to be in a particular place. If this is a fence and the road's out here, and there's a nice piece of property here in between the fence and the road that's a good place to set a geodetic control monument, we'll say, all right, let's put it here. It doesn't have to be set in a particular place, first of all. Okay? You set it there, and you set a permanent monument, such as Mr. Burkholder described, a concrete monument with a brass cap. And there's a variety of these monuments, and the NGS themselves do not use just one type of monument. They'll use different types of monuments in different locations because of the nature of the ground. This paragraph
this business approved by the National Geodetic Survey or by the county surveyor only has to do with the setting of that monument. It does not have to do with the standards, as Mr. Burkholder has been discussing in great length. This doesn't say that. If you read the first sentence, that approval that we're talking about is only with regard to setting that monument. And that monument can be set by any capable surveyor in Oregon, anybody that does this sort of thing, and all surveyors are licensed to do it, and those that are competent to do it do so. And there's really no problem. In Douglas County, we have probably 900 to 1,000 geodetic control monuments. 500 to 600 of those have been set by the county surveyor's office or by private surveyors, over half. The NGS doesn't set many of these monuments anymore. They're mostly set by private surveyors, county surveyors, state surveyors. And that approval only has to do, in this paragraph, that approval only has to do with setting that monument. It doesn't have to do with the standards. As you go on, it refers to Federal Geodetic Control Committee guidelines for third order class two. That establishes how the survey is to be done, how the position is placed on that monument, what latitude and longitude.
That we are now attempting to implement the plans that we've developed at the state's mandate, and consistently we run into difficulties. Yet we have honored those parts of the planning requirements that obligate us to oversize our service facilities so that we can serve areas that have been identified as part of our planning area and to which we are expected to supply water, sewer, and other services. It would be our hope that the committee will reject these amendments, particularly those amendments that apply to the extension of sewer service, although as we will present in additional testimony, we have concerns about other amendments as well.
Questions of these folks? Phil, did you have somebody else back there with you wanted to testify?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Representatives from the city of Milwaukee.
Why don't you ask them to come up?
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bartley Nelson. Rains. Yeah, they'll identify themselves. Ask them to identify themselves. Afternoon, folks. Please identify yourself when you're ready. Go ahead, owner.
Hey, Dan Bartlett, city manager of Milwaukee. And like Albany, we are opposed to the Dash 5 amendment. It is represented as affecting only one area. It seems like I can't get away from North Albany. I was formerly the administrator for Benton County. I'm now faced with a situation as a city manager, similar fact situation. We hope that we don't have to come to this and use 222 in an area called Johnson Creek Boulevard in Milwaukee, Clackamas County, City of Portland. It's a situation which, at some point, 222 may have to be exercised. There is a county service district, Clackamas County Service District 1. We are currently in joint public facilities planning process over how this area would be served. The area is unique in that a certain portion of the area, approximately 13%, would drain into the city of Milwaukee trunk sewers. Another proportion of the area would drain into the city of Portland Lentz trunk sewer, and another portion would drain into Clackamas County Service District Number 1's area. Department of DEQ views the whole unsewered area as one area, and it is partially within an existing county service district. We would have a very good world for land use planning if county service districts did not exist within urban growth boundaries of cities. But however, since county service districts came before the land use planning concept and urban growth boundaries, there are many cases in the state where county service districts exist within the growth boundaries and provide services within the growth boundaries of cities. Unified Sewerage Agency in Washington County is probably the biggest example in the state. This language would make joint public facilities planning difficult for cities, we believe, in that I think that in most cases, you could find civil engineers which would testify that the sewage could equally go to either the city or the service district, and in most cases, it can go to the service district. But then we multiply local government jurisdictions in Oregon, so we think it's contrary to good land use planning and good public facilities planning. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Tim, would you like to?
Yes. For your record, my name is Tim Ramis. I'm a lawyer in private practice in the city of Portland, and my practice includes representation of the city of Milwaukee, city of West Lynn, and the city of Tigard as city attorney. My comments today are on behalf of the city of Milwaukee, but I suspect they would apply equally to the other jurisdictions I represent. The concern I have is with respect to the provisions which would prohibit the use of annexation as a condition to providing service. The language on that appears in the dash 2 version of the bill, section 5, prohibiting cities from requiring annexation, and in the dash 3 version in section 7, prohibiting counties from doing the same thing. The city of Milwaukee situation is that they're currently updating their comprehensive plan. They're required to do that by the existing land use rules. Under those rules, we have to do the planning and ultimate service provision planning for the area inside of our ultimate growth boundary. That includes an area outside of our existing city limits, which currently includes the state's largest shopping center and includes a developed area which is now being redeveloped and will ultimately have a population of 88,000 people sometime in the next 20 years. We've done that planning, and one of the critical tool to make sure that that planning actually comes to fruition is the use of annexation tied to service extension, tied to sewer extension specifically. We have a draft urban growth management agreement which provides for the use of that tool to make sure the plan is implemented. We're about to engage in a citizen involvement program and process so that we can modify that agreement and make sure that we've made contact with the people that live in those unincorporated areas. We don't expect that we're going to have an automatic annexation requirement. That is, you would annex automatically upon the extension of sewer. But we expect to have a provision that would say at some defined point in the future, if you connect to sewer, you would annex. We need the ability to be able to go to the population in that area and use that tool and develop that tool and fine-tune it so that it will work in that area. If it doesn't, we haven't just ended up violating our land use planning responsibilities. We've also wasted a ton of money because our planning hasn't just been on paper. We have invested in the sewage treatment plant for the area. We've paid for 40% of that plant in order to ensure that we would have the capacity to carry out the plan. We are going to be out a substantial amount of real money if we're unable to implement our land use planning responsibilities. So that is the source of our concern and why we think that the kind of prohibition that's embodied in these drafts is a bad one and will undermine all of our ability to carry out our plan.
Phil, do you have anything to add to that?
Philip Fell, League of Oregon Cities. I'm still at the table for essentially the same reason that I was here the first time. I would point out that the City of Albany and the City of Milwaukee have commented on three different versions of the same approach to prohibit a marriage between annexation and sewer extension. And I guess our feeling is that no matter how you try to draft that language, you will impact not one but several cities. And we will continue to be extremely concerned about any attempt to implement this approach. Thank you.
Questions, committee?
Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
In terms of mandating that territory be annexed to receive a sewer, you're opposed to that now. If we were to go ahead and approve this, what would be the effect on your particular city? Would you be able to charge the people being hooked up to the sewer the same assessment that you would otherwise charge somebody else. Is that correct?
I don't believe that we could do that. We wouldn't have jurisdiction to impose a charge beyond our boundary in our situation.
Under what circumstance would you provide a sewer to somebody who is outside the city if this were to go into effect? Would it just be under the health hazard annexation provision?
Primarily, yes.
Under a DEQ order?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying that you would not be able to charge them the same assessment or the assessment necessary to pay for that extension of the service?
It would be, if we had council policy for extension, it would be possible to develop an equivalent charge, but we would not be able to utilize a number of the financial, bonding mechanisms and that outside of our boundary. And it would then place us in a situation where a service extension would be determined between the county service district and the city based upon who could extend the financing authority rather than what was the best engineering design. And so in the case I was mentioning, Johnson Creek Boulevard, conceivably then the county service district would have to extend lines to within a certain distance of our current trunk, and our lines flow, this area naturally drains toward our trunk. They would have to pump it up and then flow it to their lines. And so we are currently in a process, jointly with the county, to make some rational decisions about where drainage basin lines go and who should be the ultimate service provider. And in, as I mentioned in previous testimony, in logical sense, probably there will be portions of the area which drain to our line, portions that drain to Portland Lentz, and portions that drain to the Clackamas County Sewer District 1. And then the agency to which provides the trunk service would then assess those people and charge those people.
Just out of curiosity, the basins that have been identified, the urban growth boundaries, were they set in accordance with those drainage basins?
The urban growth boundary now is part of what we're negotiating with the county. The area we're discussing is within what Milwaukee, Happy Valley, and Johnson City, or Gladstone, excuse me, have defined as their joint urban growth boundaries of those three cities. The county is not yet a signatory to those agreements.
It includes more than one drainage.
It includes more than one drainage basin throughout the area.
Are the drainage basins being taken into account in trying to set them?
In the public facilities planning, and that's what we're saying. Within the public facilities planning, we're saying we want gravity sewer as much as possible because that's cheapest for the citizen. And so we're trying to design our service areas to affect gravity. That's also why we have a part ownership in the, or an interest in the Kellogg treatment plant, because it provides service to the whole area, including a portion of Gladstone.
Let's look at the thing in a more positive light. What if we said that the city had, in order to force annexation with sewers, had to provide one other service that currently isn't provided to the property, and that property owner is in need of?
Mm-hmm. Well, we find in our area, typically, the thing that people most want from us is law enforcement services, city police. And in most cases, that is, we're finding lately that the leader service, cities talk about leader services, and traditionally that's been sewer, water, and sometimes fire. We're in an area with fire districts also. But we're finding that right now, given the nature of crime and the nature of the development of the area east of us, North Clackamas County, that our police service is recognized as one of the best in the area, and that is a leader service. There are a number of people that are petitioning for annexation in order to be served by police. So we would be happy to provide something like police services. Albany has mentioned that they are offering phased tax rate annexation, phased services. Every city can do that under current laws, and we have discussed that as an option also, that we would charge the cost of the sewers plus perhaps whatever services the area want. I don't think that's a problem with us, and it definitely isn't a problem with Albany, I heard.
Okay, let's hit it one other way. I'm convinced in my own mind it's not fair for the government to say your septic system has failed, you have to hook up the sewer, and then have a sewer system running by your house that was in part paid for by you through your federal taxes, and then have somebody tell you you have to join the city and see your property tax go up by $7 to $10 per thousand. How do we address that? I mean, you people have gone to school and know more about these things than we do. How can that problem be addressed?
I think that possibly the best example is USA from your county, Mr. Chairman, where the cities and the county meet and develop plans, and then as areas meet a critical mass, so many people want the additional services, they trade boundaries. That's essentially what we're hoping will happen in the North Clackamas area, and that's what we're negotiating. We're meeting on the 16th with the county commissioners to further that. I think that's the mechanism, that it becomes a mechanism of joint planning and recognition of the state land use laws between the counties, the county service district, which is an agency of the county, and the cities to determine how services are provided. As you know, in the USA situation, the cities basically collect 30% of the fee, turn 70% over to USA, and then that ratio remains in effect because they've developed an agreement whereby the county service district is a long-term provider, and they've developed that means of trading areas. That doesn't always work, however, because there are areas that more directly serve, are more directly served by the city's trunk lines, treatment capacity, and that. And at that point, you have to come to a negotiated process. I believe that's why the legislature placed the Chapter 190 provisions into the code, so that we could negotiate intergovernmental agreements determining how cities and counties would work together.
But how do we protect these people? The people out there that don't want to be in the city. Mm-hmm. How do we protect them when one governmental agency says you can't improve your septic system, you have to hook up the sewers, and the city's saying they're fine, but you have to annex? How do we address that?
I think through negotiation. That's basically what I think we're saying. I think that's what Albany said. I don't know of another way to deal with it. I don't think you can legislate it. I think it's something that has to come along through the negotiation. We're finding in our particular case that there are individuals. We have a gentleman who was an
Let's start.
Okay.
You're the property owner. Mm-hmm. What do you have to negotiate? On the one hand, you have state agencies saying you will hook up. The other side, you have the city saying you can hook up, but you've got to increase your property taxes substantially in addition to the cost of hooking up and your sewer charges. I mean, tell me what I've got to negotiate.
Well, in an example, Washington Square in Washington County. Washington Square was recently annexed to the city of Tigard. It expressed that it did not really favor the idea of annexation, but it became attractive to Washington Square when it discovered that the city had the ability to phase in the taxes and phase in services so that there was not an immediate imposition of a much heavier tax burden and no corresponding services. They were able to negotiate. The city and Washington Square planned together for a phase-in of services and a phase-in of the cost.
But you could have taken them by resolution, and they couldn't have remonstrated.
Thank you, dear.
Depending on whether or not there's someone living there, registered
right.
as a voter.
But I mean, you can call it negotiation, but whenever you can take them at any time, you're not negotiating from a position of any strength, let alone equal strength.
I think you're right there. I think part of the problem from a city perspective, though, is it's very hard to shut off services. We have, in our case, City of Milwaukee, people who live just outside of the city who take advantage yet don't pay for a number of the city services, parks, our Milwaukee Center, which is a senior center. We have some differential rate structures, but it's not always easy to say, okay, you live across this line. It's very hard for citizens to say, you know, here's the line. Now, we don't want to use these services because we don't live in there, because generally they drive across the line and they use the services. What we're saying is it's fair that if they have to hook up to our sewers and they have been using our other services anyway, that we should be able to extend our boundary to include their property and charge them a rate. What we're saying is a negotiation can occur in the basis of, like Washington Square, like Albany is offered, we can phase the rate over time. The legislature has given us the tools to do that over 10 years.
But we haven't told you you have to.
No.
And you don't want that.
That's right.
So the only answer you have is the status quo.
Exactly.
Okay.
Any questions?
Kelly Fish.
I didn't come prepared to testify, so this is real off the cuff. And I don't work for any cities, but I do live in North Albany.
Good.
And have ended up
If you could identify yourself for the record, then
I will. My name is Kelly Fish, and I live in North Albany. I've ended up in the dubious position of being the spokesperson for about 90-95% of the people in the health hazard area. There's about 450 homes there on about 500 acres of land, and we've been put in the position over the years of being told we were going to ultimately get annexed, and they finally found a good excuse to try to do it through the health hazard statute. I guess what the concern is exactly what they've said, what they've been saying up here. They're using created health problems, they're helping create health hazards, and then using those as an excuse to annex you so that they can extend services to people who don't want them, don't need them, and basically can't afford them. As an individual who lives in North Albany, I've done a lot of work with most of the people who live in the health hazard area to try to acquaint them with the fact that sewers are a time that's come, period. That's something that in the past we've never been able to get across. They figured if they could keep those sewers out of there, they could keep everybody else out too. And we've tried to get that across, but the problem is that we're getting told that the only way that we can get those sewers is to have an annexation. We're being told that that way we can help pay for city services that we don't want and we don't use. If we want to use a city service at this time, as far as the park programs, you pay extra money for it. If they want us to pay more money for those people who use them, then that's fine. They can jack up the rates. Same goes with the library. We don't use other facilities in the city except to drive over their roads to get to their shopping centers, and if they prefer us not to shop in their city and take our business elsewhere, then that would be just fine by most of us. Many people do not work or shop in the city at this time anyway. They work or shop in Corvallis and Salem and so forth, the people in the health hazard area. The problem is that the cities are saying, let's just keep talking. Well, what we're hearing after several weeks of let's just keep talking is, let's talk about how can you get annexed. Well, we can do a phased-in annexation, or we can do that kind of annexation, or we can do the other kind of annexation, and hopefully it won't pinch quite as much right at the first when you're spending thousands of dollars on sewers, but you will be an annexed person because we do want the other land that you're next to be developable. Part of the problem, as I see it, is that developable land. That's what they want to get to in our particular case. We're in an area where there's primarily open space still to be developed. The health hazard boundaries were drawn so that the sewer lines would be contiguous to hundreds of acres of open property that is ultimately planned for development in the city's comprehensive plan. So people are obviously feeling that there's sort of a alternate, you know, another reason for why those health hazard boundaries were drawn besides just where there is the sewage problem. We are looking at the possibility of having an alternate plant out in North Albany, and again, we've been told by the city, well, we might look at that possibility too once you're annexed. It's everything once you're annexed. The whole point is that people have voted down for years that they don't want to be annexed. They see no value in being part of a city. They want their services. They don't want any of it. They can't afford it either. Most of the people out there are pretty well maxed out. Some of the issues that the people raised while they were talking that I kind of start is major concerns. They're talking about the efforts to coordinate the conditions. Again, I think Representative Young, it's exactly what you've said. They're trying to coordinate it as best as possible to make sure that some annexation gets brought about and not that a non-annexation gets brought about. People don't have any choice in our circumstances. We don't have any choice whether to get annexed or not, and when we try to get people to discuss things, we only get the one choice thrown back in our faces. And so we have tried to seek different methods of trying to find a way to solve this problem. We've been sitting around for 3 weeks now waiting for the city and the county and the state. Various state agencies and the county have been wonderful in the last several weeks talking with the city and finally getting the city to talk in our particular case. But we still are only getting one answer. How can we annex you? They have at least started to kindly think about how maybe they can do it so that we all don't have to walk away from our homes. But they're still talking about how can we annex you? We will annex you because we want to get to that other property out there near you. We haven't heard discussions about how they can change their comprehensive plan to allow two systems. We haven't heard about how they have the right to do an alternate plan of their own, which would say, we don't want to mess with you. In the health hazard statute, they're allowed to do their own alternative plan. We haven't heard any other kind of suggestions from the city except how to annex us. They talk about the whole issue of, in our particular case, that they have built their sewage system for capacity to serve North Albany. That's not the case. They have a very old sewage system that they're doing incredible amounts of work on. They have millions of dollars set in the next 20 years to do work on that system. That millions of dollars of work will have to take care of business that has to be done with that treatment plant, whether we're part of that treatment plant or not part of that treatment plant. They have been doing an incredible amount of work to take care of an inflow and infiltration problem, which has given them back some capacity for the meantime. The DEQ, however, has told me that they won't even say how long that treatment plant is going to last after you add even just the 1,000 people in the health hazard area to it, because requirements are changing, you know, yearly as to what a treatment plant has to do. And that could dramatically, in a year or two, change what Albany's treatment plant has to do in ways that they've admitted that they haven't even considered yet. They've been dealing with the physical functioning of the plant, the equipment, but they haven't dealt with some of these other things like the nutrients and so forth that are coming down the pike. They talk about that they use water and sewers as an incentive to annex because of the developable land in the area. Again, that's exactly what we perceive as the issue. We've even been told by some people that the city doesn't want to annex us, but they can't think of a way out of it. But then other people at the city sit there and talk about how to annex us, so we don't know anymore what to think. Like I said, we've been spending quite a bit of time sitting around trying to listen to other options from the city and had put off a hearing on another legislation that would also help us out, and it was because we were hoping that they were going to really earnestly talk about some alternative to annexation, and that didn't happen. So now we're here doing things like this again because all we're getting is talk with no action, and the talk isn't even in the direction that we need to hear it go. Mr. Bartlett, who used to work in Benton County, and now wants to buy a house in the urban growth boundary in Milwaukee. You know, he talks about the same exact issues. Even when he worked for Benton County, he was talking about the same thing about the developable land and working with the city to be able to annex us. For years, in our case, they haven't fixed up the waste, either the treatment plant that exists in North Albany, because we already have one that exists, and they also haven't fixed up the drain fields that were failing because they kept waiting for the city to annex us. The people in the area feel that this health hazard was really created by the entities involved because that was the only solution that the entities knew to force an annexation. When we had elections 3 years ago, we were told by the APC committee, which is meeting again for the first time in about a year tonight, and which represents the county, a few North Albany citizens, and the city of Albany, that if we voted against annexation to start to build some sewers in the North Albany area, that we would be allowed to fix up the treatment plant that exists out there and hook up the houses in the immediate health hazard area. There's an area that's been known for years to have the most severe problem. And when, in fact, the county in good faith did start to make the plans to do that repair work and got ready to do the LIDs and so forth to do that repair work, the city told them they wouldn't let them do it. That the city said that they felt they had the veto power to not permit North Albany to do any kind of repairs out there unless the city did the work and annexed us to let us do the work, to have the work done, I should say. So people feel very resentful and justifiably or unjustifiably feel that the health hazard, in a sense, was created by the entities to force an annexation. At this time, we have a new county commission which has been working very hard and working with the state agencies and Christine Gebby and people from the DEQ. They have been finally talking because we have several hundred citizens in this area who have made a lot of effort to show up at meetings and try to get the point across that this is a major concern to all of us. And these other people have all talked, and they have been talking to the city. The county supports a local treatment system or a non-annexation. Perhaps it may be the treatment system through Albany is the cheapest. We're still trying to figure that out. But perhaps on a fee basis for the meantime and so forth.
Was he up there?
I think that the point that you brought out about just that this is something that the cities hold over us as an option to getting us annexed is exactly the case. We have no bargaining power unless there is some type of legislation that gets us back on even grounds. They're going to lose a lot of money, some of them perhaps on plans that they've made, but they've made the plans over and above and beyond us, and we're going to lose as much money paying them back for all those plans and paying for the sewers and all the city services that are unnecessary in any event. In our case, I think there's a good deal more talking Albany could do about future zoning and situations in North Albany that they've refused in the past to deal with. But I think in general that the people in the state, you know, we've lost the right to vote over our property and our pocketbook is what's happening with these annexation laws. And people feel very strongly in the area that I live that, we thought we were guaranteed a constitutional right to vote on these types of issues, and we feel that we've lost those. And that's why some of these amendments, and I haven't even had a chance to read all of them before.
Representative Markman, we'll have another shot at this.
That's okay.
Mr. Chairman, this witness seems to have contradicted herself. She said she wasn't prepared.
I was taking notes.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I've got a few questions. Kelly, first of all, could you tell us what the nature of the health hazard is that's been declared in this area?
Well, they haven't, quote, declared it a health hazard yet. They've recommended declaring it a health hazard. Okay, the hearings officer has. What the problem is there's sort of two problems. In the area that was picked out as the health hazard boundary, there are about 450 houses, roughly 500 acres, kind of stretched out in the shape of a horseshoe, which a little strip to hook up to the city. Okay, like a Y, squared off Y is what it looks like. And there's about 123 of those houses that are on a pre-existing service package treatment, small treatment plant. The treatment plant itself is not in the greatest of condition. The county took it over several years ago because the private owner was not taking care of it. The county took it over, has done some